Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Book Talk with Lawrence J. King. From coast to coast, across the nation, Lawrence is an internationally known six-time published author. Book Talk highlights published authors from the local, regional, national, and international scene, as well as showcasing musicians and people of interest in a positive and productive way. Give a rockin' warm welcome to your host, Lawrence J. King.
All right. This is Lawrence J. King, your host of Book Talk Radio in the house. And today it is my honor and privilege to have with us on Book Talk Radio, Dr. Jerry Goldhaber. He's the warnings doctor. Dun, 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 dun. And today we will be talking to him about his book called Murder Incorporated. He is the nation's leading safety, warnings, and litigations expert. Have you ever wondered to yourself, do big companies do things that fit inside regulations but aren't necessarily what's best for you, the consumer? The answer would be 100% keeping it real, yes. That's why the good doctor is here today to bring to the light these issues so you can make better decisions for yourself and for your family. Ladies and gentlemen, it would take me a half an hour or more to allow you to understand all of Dr. Goldhaber's accomplishments, achievements, and credibility track record. So therefore, without further delay, let's bring the doctor on the show and get this party started, shall we? And so, with that being said, welcome to Book Talk Radio, Dr. Jerry Goldhaber. How are you doing today?
Nice to be with you, Lawrence, and thank you for having me.
The honor's all mine. And so, before we get started, you're quite a person. Got it going on in many ways. You've got 11 books published. So before we get into the Q&A part of this and the actual interview, tell us about your other books and how they transpired and, you know, how it all worked for you.
You know, Lawrence, that's a great question. Back in, I never envisioned myself as an author. Back in the 1970s, I was starting out as a young professor at the University of New Mexico, and I was teaching in a field called organizational communication, which basically is about how organizations communicate, how they communicate to their employees, to the public, and so on. And I was hired to develop a program in that area, and along came textbook salesmen, and they kept asking me, what do you want to use? And I didn't see any books. And so finally one of them said to me, why don't you write it? And I was thinking at age 25 or 26, how can I possibly write a book? Well, at any rate, I did it out of frustration, if that makes any sense, because nobody had written a book and in the field. So that has its both advantages and disadvantages. The major advantage is if you go first, nobody can really compare you to anybody. And that's what kept me going and avoiding writer's block. I kept thinking, well, it's not going to be that hard to be challenged because nobody can say, well, you should have done this and should have done that. And that's how it all started. Once I wrote that book, I was shocked at the number of professors around the country. When you write a textbook, it's easy to make money, as I think I may have mentioned, because you can just get a few professors with large student enrollments to buy your book. But it was easier than I thought because I was the first. And being first, everybody in the country and around the world where these courses were being developed and taught needed a textbook. And so whether they like what I said or not, I was the only game in town. And for about 5 years, it took 5 years before somebody else decided to write a competitive book, and by then I'd put my third edition out. And that's how it all started.
Wow. Quite interesting. So how did you become involved in safety and warnings issues?
Well, it's actually part of the field of communication deals with how organizations communicate safety information. I was always interested in this from the time I did my PhD at Purdue University, and I just decided that I would study this area. It became an area of research interest to me, and I did a number of studies because as a professor, you like to do research. You have to do it to get promoted, but I was really interested in this. I wanted to know, how do you get people to change their behavior? How do you get them to do something that they generally don't want to do, that may be in their best interest, but they don't see it that way at first, because people in the United States, we're kind of independent, and we like to take our own chances, form our own destiny, take a lot of risk, and this is particularly true of certain ages and demographics that I studied. So I did a lot of research in this area, and a few people heard about it through the grapevine when I was publishing it, and they passed it on to lawyers. And before I knew it, I was getting phone calls from lawyers. Lawrence, you got to understand, the only lawyer I'd ever talked to in my life at this point when I'm 25, 26 years old was somebody to make up my last will and testament. My wife wanted me to have that. And I had never had a lawyer in my family or life. So having phone calls from lawyers from around the country asking for my expert opinion was, one, very humbling, and two, quite shocking. But that's how it all started. They heard that I'd published articles about what warnings are and what makes, how people follow warnings, who does, who doesn't, what variables are that make up for a good warning and what makes up for a bad warning. And that kind of is, in a nutshell, what my research was about. It's about the design and evaluation of good warnings and how to get, and who is it that's going to follow them and who is less likely to follow them. That's the kind of program I established for over 20 years of research at the university. And then my name got out. Lawyers are uncanny in how they communicate. Even if you're opposite, somebody's on the other side against you, they respect you if they like you. They may not like that you defeated them in a court case, but they will remember you for their own work in the future. And so word spread, and one thing led to another, and my work grew, and I became known as the warnings doctor, as an expert witness, the guy to call for testimony, whether you're an injured person, a plaintiff, or whether you're a corporation defending yourself.
I understand. Yeah, that's seriously interesting. You've been doing this for like 42 years. So what has kept you involved, or maybe, you know, what has changed over the last 42 years for you?
Well, everything and nothing, and that's not being glib. First of all, the research has exploded. Regulations have increased. Corporations at least give lip service to transparency and to what I call in my book principal disclosure, telling the truth, a radical concept. That's, and I say lip service, and I'll explain in a second what I mean. So a lot's changed in terms of our knowledge. I've been joined by dozens of colleagues around the country and in other countries. We share our work and our results at meetings and in journals. And so we've learned a lot over the last 30 to 50 years about what makes good warnings and who's going to follow them and who won't. And then you know who will and won't. You can do things to help people follow the warnings if you know who they are. Sort of like the testing going on COVID. You can't fix it if you don't know who's got the virus. So that research that I did and the others joined me is something new, and that's changed. But when I say nothing's changed, I guess I've got to be cynical in a bit and say that corporations may talk the talk, but you know the rest of that expression, Lawrence. They don't all walk the walk. And they think it's in their best interest to play hide and seek with the truth about the hazards that their products can be associated with to all of us when we buy or use products in every aspect of our life. And they think that it'll hurt their bottom line, profits, in other words, if they tell us the truth about safety issues. So as I say in my book, profit over safety is no way to run a ship, and yet that's what's been going on for the last several decades. Despite things changing in terms of the academic and the research and knowledge world, and governments put out some, through government agencies like OSHA, Office of Safety Health Administration, CPSC, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, there's a dozen or so, FDA, Food and Drug Administration. There's a number of regulatory bodies out there that are supposed to look out for our interests. And they don't always do that, and that's another problem I've got that I identified in my book. But so the corporations, think of it this way, Lawrence, of a three-legged stool. And you ask what's changed, what's different. I like to call it a safety triad, but think of it as a three-legged stool where the first leg is the corporation who makes the products that are that may have some dangers associated with it. And that, virtually any product can have dangers. It doesn't mean we don't want to buy it or use it. It just means we need to know how to use it safely. And then the second leg of the stool would be the government regulatory agency. Their simple job is to look out for our interests and make sure the corporations design safe products and tell us how to use them safely, meaning warnings. And the third leg of the stool is us, the consumer. If any one leg of a stool falls, your listeners know, that'll collapse the stool. Unfortunately, we're in a situation today, when you ask what's changed, we're in a situation today where two out of the three legs of the stool are not just wobbly, they're on the verge of collapse if they haven't already. What do I mean? Corporations aren't warning, they're hiding. They've listened to Lee Iacocca, who died last year, when he said 45 years ago, he said, safety doesn't sell. And I'm trying to say the opposite, safety sells. Well, they believe in hiding the truth. I believe in telling the truth. I want principled disclosure. So that leg is wobbly, if not already collapsed. Now you say, well, the government will protect us. There's a slight problem with that. The government is infected by a disease called the revolving door. What does that mean? It means that the regulators, and I studied this, and over the last 50 years, I looked at every regulatory agency that's supposed to look out for our interests, every one of them. It's an entire alphabet soup. And I looked at the commissioners, those who lead those agencies. You want to know something? 68%, almost 7 in 10 of those commissioners either came from or went to the very industries they're supposed to regulate. And in many cases, the revolving door hit them in the behind, coming and going. So now we've got a situation with two-thirds of the stool are either wobbly or collapsing. So that leaves it up to us to become informed consumers. And that's where we are today.
Interesting, highly interesting. So you've dealt with a lot of corporations and even the Department of Defense. Is there any particular entity that says, here comes Dr. Goldhaber again, boys, you better pack it up and make sure everything's looking good here. Do you have any people that have animosity toward you?
Every marketing director in the United States. I've worked for probably three-quarters of the Fortune 500 companies in my 42, now 43 years doing this. And so I work both sides. I've helped. I'm not the enemy of the corporation. I want to help them. I want to help them not just lead the consumers to the water. I want them to help them drink the water of truth. So I'm on their side, and it's, as I say in my book, it's good business for the corporation to engage in principled disclosure, to tell the truth. What do I mean? Good business means that they won't lose the sale. The consumers will respect you. Public relations people will love you. The consumers will respect you. And it's not that they can't handle the truth, the way Jack Nicholson said in that famous movie clip of his, A Few Good Men. We can handle the truth. We want the truth. And maybe our political leadership in COVID could take a lesson from that. Principled disclosure will not cost you sales. And I've done the studies and research, published them. In fact, it increases sales. Companies that tell the truth do better than companies that don't. It's consumers just want to know, hey, how can I get hurt? Can I get hurt? And if so, how? And what can I do to limit the damages? It doesn't mean I'm not going to smoke cigarettes. If I've chosen to smoke cigarettes, it's just that I need to know what I'm up against. So I got to tell you, Lawrence, most companies look at me as the marketing directors, especially. They look at me as the Grinch who stole their Christmas bonus because they think I'm going to kill their sales. I have one funny story that's it's classic. I was hired by a lawyer, a very famous lawyer, said, I want you to help me with a client who's, I won't name the company, but they're one of the large manufacturers of fiberglass wool insulation products, which has a potential to cause cancer to people who inhale those fiberglass wool particles on a regular basis. You and I won't do it, but the people who install these things in your attic and in your sidewalls and your siding, they're at risk. They do it 2-3 times a day. At any rate, I was brought into the company to talk to the chairman and the president, the board, the big honchos. The marketing director was sitting right next to the president. So I saw the scope of the room and who was sitting where. And before the meeting started, I called the lawyer outside and I said, hey, you and I are talking. It's privileged. Nobody needs to know and has to know what we're saying. But would you please go in there before me? And I want you to particularly tell the president and the marketing guy sitting right next to him not to ask any questions about sales and the impact of my safety on the price of their products or the number of gadgets they're going to sell, in this case, buckets of fiberglass wool insulation. I said, I don't want to be a witness in a trial where they said, we're not going to do it because it would hurt sales because we're all going to be witnesses sometime. So I said, go in there and tell them, don't say it, don't raise it. So I said, I'll wait outside till you tell me I can go in. So he comes out and I said, is the coast clear? He said, yep, the coast is clear. Come on in. They've all been schooled and they won't say a word about sales. I walk in and I'm facing I'm facing the president, and next to him to his right is the senior vice president of marketing. And I couldn't get through more than 2 minutes of my presentation. That was it. I literally was, and I the guy from marketing starts interrupting me. And he says, well, what will this mean to our, and he was about to say sales. The president, I could see under the table, he literally kicked him. He kicked him and then he grabbed his arm around him. I thought he was going to gag him. He put his arm close to his mouth. And what he meant, he said was, well, what John really means is, can you assure us that when we do this program, we want to be the industry leader in doing the right thing? And it was a great experience. And it taught me that some of these folks in marketing just can't help themselves. They just are so afraid that doing the right thing will cost them sales and thus their bonuses. But that's the adversity. And sometimes it stays with it. I'll do a series of warnings. I did this one of the major soft drink beverage companies because their caps had a slight problem. Their caps were blowing up and rendering the poor victims who were in the way of that blind. And so we had to put some warnings on about the exploding bottle cap. And my own client, we got away with it for about 2 years, putting the right warnings on. Then I started to notice, because I watch my clients' products all the time, I started to see they were putting bright-colored advertisements all over the front of their bottles, totally distracting from my warnings, which were supposed to be read and seen. You can't follow a warning if you can't see it. You're not going to see it if your attention is to these big ads on the bottle for contests of these drinks. So I called up the president of the company. I said, look, you've got to do this. Get these ads off or I'm not going to be your witness anymore. So you have to be careful over the years to just stay in touch with your clients and make sure they keep doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's keeping it 100% real. This is Lawrence J. King on Book Talk Radio. I'm inspired and motivated as I'm interviewing Dr. Jerry Goldhaber. We're talking about his books as well as his life. And so let's get into your book just a bit there, Dr. Goldhaber. Why are you releasing your book, Murder Incorporated, now?
This was a great time to do it because I'll mention the president's administration. President Trump engaged in a deregulatory nightmare. He has systematically tried to decimate the regulatory agencies and, more important, the regulations, many of which are vital to the protection of human life and limb, some of which I've had major input into developing. So for me, it got personal because some of the things I was consulting on, some of the regulations that I wasn't directly involved with but was very familiar with, the Trump administration was systematically trying to dismantle with absolutely no regard for the safety of workers. If it was an OSHA regulation, which one of them, the beryllium regulation, took 30 years to get people to change the standard by which people could inhale the right amount and not get sick from working in beryllium as a metal, making jet airplanes and weaponry and so on. And everybody finally got on board to lower the number that would infect people if they were exposed to it. And then Trump pulled the whistle and said, well, let's study it some more. I don't want to hurt the industry. Even though the industry had already agreed to get on board. That was just one example. Another one, I was working as a consultant along with others to the FDA trying to help with the redevelopment of the nutrition and food label that gets rewritten every once in a while. And this is a big deal. This is a really big deal because it had to do with the communicating of the amount of sugar in my aspect of it I was interested in. How do we communicate how much sugar is in products, food products, and beverages? And if you notice, it's in grams, not teaspoons, and nobody speaks metric. And more importantly, added sugar was hidden behind words like high fructose corn syrup, evaporated cane juice. People don't even understand what that is, but the advantage to the food industry was precisely for that reason. If you hide the amount of sugar and you hide it by using grams instead of teaspoons, and if you hide the actual presence of sugar by using fancy chemical names, and there's about 50 or 60 such labels that define sugar, but people don't know what they mean. And the industry's been getting away with that for decades, and the FDA finally had enough. They were going to change it after years of hearings and opinions back and forth and lobbying by the industry. Finally, they came up with a compromise. Unfortunately, they still leave it in grams, which is like telling you and me to conduct this interview in Greek. I don't know how many people out there in your audience speak or understand Greek. I don't. Maybe you don't. But the point is 5% of Americans understand the metric system, and the sugar industry still communicates in metric. That's deliberate. Their irony is their argument was to Congress, and I was there when they made it, they said, well, we want to help educate American children in metrics. That's nonsense. They want to keep it in metrics because they know American children don't understand it, and therefore they won't know how much sugar they're ingesting. I went ahead and I got one of my recommendations got adopted. They went to a single formula for added sugar. So if you look at your products now, it'll simply tell you how many grams of total added sugar without any fancy hidden names. Well, that's now in effect, but for 3 years of the Trump administration until recently, they blocked implementing it. Why is that important? We have in this country an obesity and diabetic crisis. We have one-third of America, one-third. That's over 100 million Americans are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. And to bring this back to home, the real culprit are sugary drinks, by the way, although it's not exclusive to the drinks. But if you have one Coke, and I'm talking about a 20-ounce bottle, which is their number one selling Coca-Cola product, or a Mountain Dew or a Pepsi, I'll give equal damage to any product. Just drink one of those a day, you have now increased your chance of having a cardiovascular event by 35%. Imagine, you have one of those a day, you have just increased your chance of having a heart attack or something like that by 35%. And it gets worse than that because sugar is the name Coke didn't come by so innocently. Sugar is 8 times more addictive than cocaine. I'll repeat that. Sugar is 8 times more addictive than cocaine. So, in fact, the early configurations of Coke, the early formulas, actually had cocaine in them. And back at the turn of the century, dentists were actually using cocaine to numb people's teeth. But that's a different story. At any rate, the government blocked this vitally important regulation from going into effect. And during 3 years, I shiver to think of how many people died because they were not aware of the sugar in the products that they were consuming. and this particularly affected communities of color. And one of the things that's happened with COVID is the Band-Aid's been ripped off. We now know that COVID not only affects communities of color 3 to 4 times more so than communities that are white, but it also has exposed the pre-existing conditions that have been more likely associated with communities of color, such as asthma, hypertension, diabetes, obesity, all these heart disease. All of these you find communities of color are more likely to be afflicted by. And not coincidentally, they're living in crowded housing conditions, have poorly paying jobs, have access to less high quality health insurance and health care, hospital systems, and poor jobs and poor education to boot. When you put all that stew together, it's a perfect opportunistic infection, COVID, to reach communities of color. And the sugar industry has done nothing but contribute to this disease by targeting those very communities. The advertisements that are being foisted on communities of color by the junk food industry are shameless. You'll find a church event sponsored by McDonald's French fries, which are designed to give you a heart attack after 20 years. You'll find neighborhood dances and socials sponsored. They used to sponsor by the tobacco industry until that was banned. So the sugar industry took over. So it's an insidious situation where corporations are not only providing hazardous products, but they're promoting them to those who are greatest at risk. And that's very dangerous. So that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I got tired of seeing the Trump administration engage in what I call wholesale murder. It's murder, and that's why I call the book Murder, Inc. If you had done some of the stuff they've done, we'd be sent away for life or in a state with the death penalty. We'd be given the death penalty. That's why I called it Murder, Inc.
Well, that's keeping 100% real. So, Dr. Goldaber, can you give us examples of your 12 steps to becoming an informed consumer?
Yes, and as I said earlier, it's really come down to us, Lawrence. When you've got corrupt government regulatory bodies with revolving doors that will spin your head watching these regulators coming and going, and when you've got organizations, corporations that are strictly in it for profits over their profits over our safety, that really leaves it up to us. So I've offered a 12-step program to make us more informed as consumers. My tagline is basically, the more informed you are, the safer you'll be. The more informed you are, the safer you'll be. Now, how do you become more informed? Well, if the government's not going to tell you and the corporations aren't going to tell you, you're on your own. So a few things you can do. One, it sounds obvious, but please, friends, read and try to understand all of the labels of any product you buy. Read the instructions. Read the labels. And if you don't understand something, there's an 800 number. Call it up and ask questions about what's going on. Number two, join a consumer or start, if there isn't one, a consumer advocacy group. I'm a consumer advocate. I come out of the Ralph Nader, Aaron Brockovich tradition. In fact, Aaron wrote the introduction to my book or an introductory pages for my book. I believe strongly that you and I, your listeners, can form consumer advocacy groups, groups that look out for each other, share stories, start a blogs, read about what other users of these products are experiencing. You know, the Yelp, sort of a Yelp review on steroids is what I'm offering. A third thing I would suggest you do is actually, it's easy. Follow the government agencies that regulate the products that we use. And by the way, in my book, I'm talking about products that cut across every aspect of our lives, whether we're working, whether we're eating, whether we're traveling, whether we're playing, whether we're communicating. all aspects, living at home. I got cutesy. My son is a lyricist, so he gave me the titles, the subtitles. So my book's seven chapters have the one-word title based on where the hazards occur. So, for example, residing means home, so home is where the hazard is, right? Working, hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to death we go, and so on. It's a little dark comedy, but I'm trying to get your attention. So what a consumer can do is actually contact the regulatory agencies that govern the products that we use. If it's an automobile, because the automobile industry is one of the most dangerous industries in existence. It has been since almost their creation. Dangerous in terms of not telling us. Well, there's a government regulatory body that governs that. NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA. Everybody calls it NHTSA. If you have a question or want to know, for example, how dangerous is that new Toyota I'm buying, you can go to your library and look up or use your computer and Google, as I say to senior citizens, go to the Google machine, Gramps, and look up the number of injuries associated with your Toyota. And I pick on Toyota because I write about it. They had a problem known back a couple of years ago. It was called the sticky gas pedal. Lawrence, you can't make this up. Consumers were tragically putting their foot on the gas pedal, and just like an Alfred Hitchcock horror movie, you couldn't stop the car. The brake was disassembled. It wasn't working, and the gas pedal wouldn't come up. And, in fact, it got worse. It made you go faster and faster, and people were actually dying very tragically because of the sticky gas pedal. If you or I had tried to murder somebody with a sticky gas pedal by taping it down, we wouldn't be very good criminals. We'd probably get caught, and we'd get the death penalty if it's in the right state or get life in prison. Toyota wrote a check for $1 billion and was allowed to not admit guilt for anything they did, and they wrote a check. Similarly, that year, General Motors had a problem with its ignition, which had, when you turned it on, it somehow disassembled the airbag system. Long and short of it is, they wrote a check for $1 billion and the problem disappeared. Not the hazard, but their legal problem disappeared. They paid the government off to look the other way. And the other one that also is in the auto industry, Takata makes most of the airbags that are in everybody's automobile throughout the world. Takata airbags had a slight problem in hot and humid climates. So in Louisiana, Alabama, Florida, down in the south and southwest, not so much southwest as south, the accelerant that ignited the airbag would prematurely go off, sending shards of metal into the chests of the drivers and passengers, killing them immediately. That's a horrible way to die. And it happened under the watch of the president of Takata, and the tragedy was 20 years before the first person was injured or killed, he knew it could happen because his engineers told him it could happen. They did a study, and he told his engineers, please don't tell anybody about this, and if you do, you're fired. So they buried the study, and then ultimately the crisis occurred, and these Japanese engineers got religion, and he told the New York Times. And that's how I heard about it, and I put it in my book. So auto industry, as a consumer, you got to find the regulatory agency, Google it, and find out what injuries are associated with the automobiles. And the same thing for any product. What can you as a consumer do? Be very informed. And it's not easy because the industry is out to make you uninformed. Example, you watch television. Two-thirds of ads on TV are from one industry. Can you guess what it is? It's pharma. You turn on CNN, it's three-quarters of their advertising. MSNBC, the same. Ask your doctor if so-and-so isn't right for you. Now, they all have one thing in common, and I did a study on this to show that I was leaning in the right direction with what I'm about to say. If you look at all these TV ads, and you can't miss them, they're on every 5-10 minutes, you'll see a pharma ad on any channel. You'll see very beautiful women handsome men, gorgeous grandparents, throwing footballs in the parks, beautiful scenery, lakes and parks and boats and swans, and sexy men and women throwing footballs around, and the grandchild's going on grandpa's shoulders, all beautiful visuals. What's happening? Why you see those visuals, television's a visual medium, right? While you're watching those TV images, the announcer in the background is telling you, and they always occur in the middle of the advertisement, the announcer at that point is saying, by FDA mandate, he has to say the hazards, and this product will cause this and that and this and that and even kill you and so on. So the problem is that the warnings are being told by an announcer who is not in front of you. He's in backdrop, and what's the front picture you're looking at? These beautiful images. Television is a medium of imagery and pictures. And so I did a little test. I showed that people who heard those warnings on radio, meaning they didn't see it on TV, they're more likely to, A, hear there were warnings, and B, remember some of what they're about. Not all of it, but some of it. The people who saw it on TV didn't even know there were warnings. That's deliberate, and that's done in cahoots with the FDA. So in order to be an informed consumer, you have to be aware of the tricks that are being foisted upon us. And that's something I lay out in my book.
Wow. Absolutely wow. So, Dr. Goldhaber, you're a well-sought-after man. I mean, you're on TV, you're on radio, you're all over the place. Where can people hear or see you next?
Okay, thank you for asking. Well, first, the book, Murder Incorporated, is available wherever you get your books, if it's Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Kindle, you know, whatever you want. You'll find the book anywhere, Murder, Inc. Last I looked, it was in the top 100 in Amazon, which isn't bad considering all the stuff on COVID that's out there and anti-racism and so on. So it's doing okay. The other thing you can do is you can listen to my podcast, which is launching. The podcast is called Exposed, an exclusive look behind the curtain of corporate greed. It's another way of saying profit over safety. Exposed, an exclusive look behind the curtain of corporate greed. That podcast you can find wherever you find your podcast. It's on every one of the podcast podiums, I guess. And I am the Warnings Doctor. That's my brand. I'm on CNN every once in a while giving my 2 cents worth. Although these days, if it hasn't got to do with COVID or Trump or something, they're not going to talk much about product safety. But that's pretty much it. I have a YouTube channel, The Warnings Doctor. You can find that, Jerry on YouTube.com, Jerry with a G on YouTube.com. The book has its own website, MurderInkByJerry.com, MurderInkByJerry.com. So you'll find me. I'm available, and I love to hear from listeners and readers. I respond to every single email, every single one. So by all means, engage with me. I love to hear from readers. And my whole goal is to have you say to me, Jerry, I didn't know that, and Jerry, this could have been me. If you tell me that, then I'll know I've done a good thing.
Absolutely. So what will people learn by going to your website?
Well, they'll first of all learn a little bit more about me and the work I've done. You can go to goldhaber.com. That's a website that's all about all my work, whether it's at CNN or whether it's the work I've done for corporations or for injured parties, become plaintiffs, the injured party in a lawsuit. You can find out a lot about the books I've written, and my biography is there, of course. It's a pretty usable website. I'm also on social media, but I don't do it. I'm going to be confessing to you. You want to keep it real. I have a social media director who handles all this stuff, and she's terrific, I guess. She puts me out there on all the social media, LinkedIn and Facebook. I'm not doing Facebook, but I'm on Facebook and Instagram and wherever I'm, Twitter, wherever I'm supposed to be, they tell me I'm supposed to be there. They take care of it. So you can find me on YouTube, my podcast, my book, and through the social media. If you do find me, I will be happy to respond to readers.
Absolutely. So with that being said, I mean, we can go on and on. There's so much to discuss about this. I'm getting a thing from the side here that's saying the time is lapsing and going to need to sign off today. But I do thank you, highly thank you for being a guest on Book Talk Radio today, Dr. Goldaber. And so if you could give a shout out to, you know, the people that you'd like to give a shout out to, let's plug that real quick before we go off the air, you know, where people can get your books, who do you want to say hello to and things like that.
I'd like to give a shout out to the President of the United States and say, would you please stay home and stop talking about COVID? You are misleading people in America. People of America, my shout out is listen to Anthony Fauci, the scientists and the doctors, and wear a mask, keep distance from people, and let's weather this down together. Wear a mask. It'll help you. It'll help your brothers and sisters, and we'll all get through this together. Thank you very much.
Amazing. Thank you, Dr. Goldaber, for being a guest today. And with that, I'll plug a couple more things, and I'll let you go, and pretty sure you got other things to go do.
Thanks for having me, Lawrence. You take care and be safe.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
This is Lawrence J. King, your host of Book Talk Radio, talking about Dr. Jerry Goldaber's amazing book called Murder Incorporated. It's keeping it real. It's keeping it 100% real. And I would highly suggest that you get out there and you get a copy of that book, because it is nothing but keeping it real. And it could save your life. So this man is hands down a well-sought-after individual all over the country and all over the world, because he keeps it real. And so with that being said, this is Lawrence J. King, your host of Book Talk Radio, signing off today. And tune in the next time when you hear me say, Book Talk Radio, thank you for tuning in today. And with that said, have a good evening. Thank you.